Will Rogers, Ambassador of Goodwill, Prince of Wit and Wisdom, Chapter 12, Prime Minister of Aviation. Will Rogers was the number one air passenger of the United States, according to the records of two great transcontinental airlines. Aviation experts held it ironical that he should make his final flight while on one of his very rare trips in a privately owned plane and far off the established air lanes with their many safeguards. Rogers preferred travel by air, whether on long or short flights, at home or abroad, and he always preached the doctrine of the safety of flight behind transport pilots in modern planes beating their way over carefully charted paths. He made more than 25 crossings of the United States by airplane. That, with his other flying, made more than 500,000 air miles that he had flown over the country. Flying meant more to Will Rogers than his lucrative stardom in the movies. It was related that he waved aside a cool $1 million to indulge in his desire to travel by air. It was in regard to a life insurance policy which carried a double indemnity clause in case of death by violence or accident. The company refused the policy because of Rogers' passion for flying. Rather than agree to stop flying, Rogers had the provision stricken from the policy. By special permit from Washington, Rogers held a pass that entitled him to travel in airmail planes virtually wherever and whenever he chose, regardless of whether they carried passengers regularly. It is said he was the first unofficial person ever to hold such a permit. A staunch supporter of aviation. What the permit meant to him was shown by the fact that he carefully preserved every passage receipt for all his air trips and kept an itemized account of all expenses involved in his flights. Will had preached the doctrine of air travel so consistently that he had an idea he might someday be accused of being a paid propagandist for the airlines. He was anxious to avoid such a charge, and he would not accept a free ride from an airline company, although it would have been given gladly. He frequently used the radio on behalf of aviation. On one occasion, before going on the radio, he said, "Wait till you hear the boost I have tonight for traveling in airplanes. I bet a lot of guys will be on my neck tomorrow saying some airplane company paid me a lot of money to knock the railroads." On another occasion, he wired his daily comment to the McNaught Syndicate from El Paso, Texas, with high praise for the safety of flight. That was in April 1931, as he was about to start his Central American tour. It was shortly after Newt Rockne, famed Notre Dame football coach, was killed in an airplane crash. It read, "Had a great trip been here today over the American Airways passenger line. Kelsey, the pilot, has flown 400,000 miles without a sign of a mishap. Glad to hear in Los Angeles this morning from the different airlines that the late accident, the crack-up in which Rockne was killed, did not interfere with travel. Why, my hair turned from gray to white just 15 minutes ago in a taxi going over to Juarez when a Mexican missed us by inches. Would have given my life to have been in a plane." On one occasion, he was to ride an airmail plane between Los Angeles and New York. For the fun of the thing, Rogers appeared at the airport attired in a swanky aviator's costume of soft brown leather. "I'm just going to New York to have dinner with a couple of fellers," he said, as he laughed at his attire. The pilot entered into the spirit of the occasion and insisted that since Rogers had on a new flying gear, he must be without much flying experience. He told Rogers they would have to have a rehearsal on the use of the parachute and ordered him to jump from the cockpit of the plane and count 10 before pulling the ripcord. "If I have to use that thing," said Rogers, putting his parachute, "10 will be an awful short count. They gave Gene Tunney a count of 14. Airmen, favorites of Rogers. Rogers was a friend of all the famous flyers of his time. He had flown several times with Colonel Charles Lindbergh and was an intimate friend of the Lone Eagle. Rogers was one of the few persons that had visited the Colonel and Ann Morrow Lindbergh in their secluded home in Sauerland Mountain. There, Will had played with the Lindbergh's firstborn, Charles A. Lindbergh, Jr., the baby who was kidnapped and murdered. Frank Hawks, noted speed king of the air, was another favorite pilot of Rogers. Hawks himself, from the Southwest, had flown Rogers thousands of miles through that section on charity missions and on behalf of drought and unemployed victims in Texas in 1931. As a part of their act, Rogers taught Frank to make a speech. The flyer, however, unconsciously picked up many of Will's mannerisms and quaint expressions. "I sometimes think I am Will Rogers," Hawks once told a group of actors. As he made the remark, he reached up and scratched his head in the familiar Rogers manner. It created an uproar. But Wiley Post, with whom he died, was Rogers' favorite. On the occasion of dedicating the landing field at Claymore, Oklahoma, Rogers said, "It wasn't ambition that drove Wiley Post up in the air. It was a boll weevil. Wiley used to be on a cotton farm. If it hadn't been for the Republican administration, he might have remained an underfed, overmortgaged farmer. So you got to quit knocking the Republicans, and they really made Wiley Post what he is. He got his mechanical knowledge from working in a garage. He worked in cahoots with a feller in the next town, and they got so they could fix a car so it would fall entirely apart when it reached the other feller's place. A plane crashed one day near Wiley's garage, and all that was left intact was the propeller. So Wiley took it, put it on a flivver in place of a fan, and flew with it on a solo flight. Wiley was raised on a Texas norther and weaned on a Oklahoma cyclone." Crashes were nothing new in Rogers' experience in the air. Two of them happened in one day in 1928. On that day, he had taken off from Omaha in a specially chartered plane and was forced down at Cherokee near Cheyenne, Wyoming. One of the wheels hit a gopher hole and was torn off. Rogers went on to Cheyenne by automobile and boarded a mail plane, which turned over on its back as they were landing at Las Vegas, New Mexico. "Wheel broke when she come down and turned over and lit on her head," he said. "Am the first candidate to land on his head, but being a candidate, it didn't hurt the head." Joked about death in the air. Time after time, Rogers told friends that some of his best quips were written in the air. In recent years, he never would take a train or a boat if he could go by airplane. He scoffed at the idea of danger. "Those flying fellows at the controls," he once told David Butler, his director, "have as much to lose as me. They're young fellows, most of them, and they have their whole lives ahead of them. Old Will has had his fun and enjoyed every minute of it." Another occasion, he carried his humor into a conversation about death in the air. Senator Pat Harrison of Mississippi told Rogers he ought to cut out flying, that he was going to be killed. "But he merely told me," Harrison related, "that I would be killed and try and hit a golf ball." Rogers was in New York when Roosevelt canceled the airmail contracts. The studio at Hollywood needed him at once and telephoned, but he replied that he could not come as passenger plane schedules had been abandoned. The film company officials told him to come by train, but he refused. Finally, he procured a plane and went as far as Texas when adverse weather interrupted the flight. Will telephoned the studio that he was getting close. Again, the movie people tried to get him to take a train, but he waited until the plane was able to get through. An invertebrate air traveler. In December 1927, Will was on one of his periodical trips to Mexico. He was one of the 50,000 spectators that waited 7 hours at the Mexico City airport for Colonel Charles A. Lindbergh to end his nonstop flight from Washington. He sat in the principal stand with President Calles and Ambassador Morrow, who later became Lindbergh's father-in-law, while the lone eagle of the Atlantic was fighting his way through fog to reach his destination. On that visit to Mexico, he was taken aloft by Lindbergh for a flight over the Mexican mountains in the Spirit of St. Louis. Rogers made his first flight in 1925, and he flew under all sorts of weather conditions. He once rode in a Navy plane when it was catapulted along a 60-foot runway into the air. Needless to say, Rogers enjoyed the thrilling experience immensely. In 1926, while visiting Europe, he traveled by air from Rome to Paris and twice from London to Berlin. From the German capital, he flew on to Moscow. Among Roger's ambitions was the desire to become the world's airplane reporter. He wanted to have his own plane, fit it up, and spend his time flying around the world to the points where the big news of the day was happening and record his observations. His flight to the Manchurian battlefields, to Mexico, South America, and around Europe were all in line with his idea of being an aerial newspaper man. He never learned to fly a plane by himself, it was said, because he had promised Mrs. Rogers he would not. His wife, however, became an enthusiastic air traveler herself. Rogers always placed confidence in the pilots, and he delighted in becoming personally acquainted with them. He never tried or tired of talking with flying men, and of them he remarked, "This thing about somebody's life being too valuable to risk in an airplane is the bunk. It's an insult to the men we ask to do our flying." On one trip from New York to the coast, Rudy Valley, the radio star, was a passenger on the plane. Commenting on it in his daily news feature, he wrote, "I've made this trip by air 100 times, but I never saw such mobs at the fields. Rudy Valley is on our ship. I am just as excited as they are and say he is a very modest, likable young fellow. I was even flattered when the folks at Amarillo thought I was his father." Dean of the Friars. Rogers thought nothing of hopping into an airplane in California and hightailing it to New York. On one occasion, the Friars Club wanted to honor him by making him dean of the club. Friar Vic Guinness, artist and illustrator, drew a striking likeness of Rogers as a tribute to him. More than 500 members of the club put their autographs on the picture, and it was sent to him without a word of explanation. Charles Pope, secretary of the Friars, later called him up on a long-distance telephone and said, "Bill, that is what we think of you. The boys who autographed that picture want you to be dean of the club." Roger stammered, "Why, it's a grand picture. Vic did a swell job. Wait, I'll be in New York tomorrow." He then rushed out and boarded a plane at Los Angeles. The next day, according to his promise, he walked into the Friars Club. "I appreciate the honor," Rogers explained to the Pope, or make that to Pope, "but I can't take it. I'm not in New York much anymore anyway. George Jessel makes a swell dean. He ought to be reelected." Will then hurried from the club, boarded another transcontinental plane, and was homeward bound after only a little more than an hour in New York. His electioneering for Jessel was successful, and George was reelected. Major General John F. O'Ryan of New York recalled meeting Rogers and Frank Hawks at Fort Worth while they were making their relief flights. O'Ryan told Rogers that Hawks' plane was exceptionally fast and the pair might just as well be riding a comet. "Yep," answered Rogers, "but we are specialists with comets." The fact that Franklin Roosevelt flew out to Chicago to accept the nomination for president pleased Rogers immensely. "Looks like we're going to have a president with nerve enough to fly," he declared. One of that last articles Rogers wrote for his Sunday syndicate featured showed the great love that he had for the air. He said that his feet were bad and his legs were worse, "so I take mine out and riding in the air." He told how they flew over Mount Shasta, coming very close to the summit. He described the beautiful mountain as snow all over that old anthill. Commenting upon their stop in Medford, Oregon, he took occasion to poke a little fun at an ambitious reporter from that city who had sent out a dispatch that he had seen Wiley Post and me flying over there when we were, at the time, crossing Arizona. "This time," Will wrote, "he is liable to report that I arrived there by horse and buggy." He recalled that in his vaudeville days in 1908, he played in Tacoma, and that was the first city that had the slogan. It read, "Watch Tacoma grow." "I never watched it much since," commented Will, "but it did. A plane is a great place to see anything, only the wings are right under where you want to look, and you can't see anything. I really did see Mount Shasta. They couldn't hide that under the wings."